It's an honor to have Mike Esch here again, and Mike has been a huge influence in my life. I know early on, Mike was the guy that asked me to come to back then Kids Club. I think that was back in 97 or 98, and so that was my one of the first times when I started coming. But I know Mike was the one that was an instigator in getting me involved. So I don't know where I'd be if that wouldn't have happened. So I want to bless you, Mike, and just inviting me, and because it was just a turning point for me in my life and my journey. So I want to bless you. Not only then, but even since then, Mike has brought lots of inspiration. So I want to bless you. And so I'm just going to turn the time over to you, Mike, and you can run with, if you want to do introductions or whatever you want to talk about, why go for it. So we are also going to, the offering this morning is going to go toward 41 Life, so we'll take that after you're finished. So bless you, Mike.
To be here again this morning. I don't know. Something's going weird there. I'm going to trust Jason to maybe figure that out for me. But thanks for allowing me to come back, and Dale for the invitation. I know I was here just probably a year ago or so. And when I was getting ready for the presentation this morning, I actually dug up my old notes because I had to make sure I'm not repeating myself too much. But this morning, I'm going to just spend a little bit of time giving you guys an update about what's going on in India, where, for those of you who don't know, I live in India about 80 or 90% of the time, manage to come back here for a month or two each year, it seems like. And, the last year has just been such an amazing time of God's faithfulness. You know, at the end of last year, I sat down to put together a report for, we have kind of a local board over there, and we had a dinner around Christmas time, and I sat down to put together a report to give to them.
MacBook locked up. That's not a good sign.
All right. that's what happens. We tested it just before worship, and it worked perfect. But we'll get it. So I sat down to put together this report, and some days when I'm sitting there in my office all day long, it seems like the only thing that happens is you put out fires. Like you start working on something, somebody comes in the door, and you spend half an hour with them. And believe me, over there, like culture in their culture, you don't, when someone comes into your office, you don't get directly to the topic. Like you sit there and talk about nothing related to the topic for at least 20 minutes, and then you take care of the issue. And so, you do that, someone else, you get back to work, just starting to get on a roll, someone else comes in, and sometimes it seems literally like you just sit there and spin your wheels, and at the end of the week, like, what did I accomplish this week? I don't know, I can't really put a finger on it, So I have a lot of weeks like that. But when I sat down at the end of the year to put together that report, and went through all of our projects one by one and did an update and put some pictures together to present to them, I said, wow, stuff actually did happen. And it was such a testament of God's faithfulness. Even though in the middle of things sometimes, and a lot of you I'm sure can relate to this, it doesn't seem like much is happening, like not much progress is being made. But when you actually take the time to sit down and look back over, a year or whatever the period of time is, you can see God's hand at work. And that's exactly what happened. Are we getting anywhere, Jason?
Well, I had to force it down. Max.
All right. So over the years, I've been there for almost exactly 3 years now. It's almost exactly 3 years since I moved to India full time. I've been traveling there for quite a while before that. And, we went in with all these ideals of what we were going to do, what we were going to accomplish. And after having traveled there for 9 or 10 years before I moved, I thought I knew the culture, I thought I knew the people, I thought I knew what would work. Well, believe me, when you actually get there and you're living there day after day and working with people day in and day out from an entirely different culture, sometimes the things that you had in mind of what would work and what wouldn't work just kind of all get thrown out the window, and that's exactly what happened. But as we spent time there and as we developed relationships with people. We started seeing the needs of the young people, needs that we had known were there, but not known to the extent. Thanks, Jason. I appreciate that. Needs that again, we knew were there, but we didn't quite know the extent we were there. We started seeing young people, and young people in particular have always been on my heart. And so when we started our ministry there in India, that was our focus. We were focused on the young people of the town and helping them develop. And kind of the dynamic that we've got there in that town is this is a predominantly Christian town. Probably almost 100% of people in the town will say they are Christians. You go and ask someone on the street, what is your religion or are you a Christian? They will say, yes, we're a Christian. We go to church. But then if you ask them, when did you become a Christian? Most of the time, the response you'll get is, oh, I was born a Christian. And so their mindset is you're born either a Hindu, you're born a Muslim, or you're born a Christian. And so while most of them attend church and do all the Christian things, so to say, the mindset of what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ and the understanding of that is lacking. And so we would meet people and we would start getting involved in their lives and start seeing just the need that was there for a deeper understanding about what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And we would meet these young people who were, you know, 1 year we would go and they were, you know, doing great. They were on fire as much as their understanding allowed them to be. And then a couple years later, we'd go back and they were into drugs and alcohol, and which is a huge problem for young people in that area. And I'm going to be telling you a few stories kind of throughout, but we would meet young people like this guy's name is Chansin Moy, all right? That's a little bit of a mouthful even for us, so we call him C. Moy. Yeah, we make it nice and short. And you know, he was a guy who came from a family who his father was an alcoholic, his parents had split up, his father was living out of the area, his mother wasn't really in the picture, and this is something in the culture there that a lot of you will find surprising just because it's so different from our culture. But when a divorce case happens, the mother abandons the children. The mother goes to, you know, a lot of times a new marriage, and the children go with the father. That's just how it works. Well, this what ends up happening is the father's got to work to support the family. Most times cannot care for the children, and so the children end up in an orphanage or with grandparents, something like that. And that's exactly what had happened to him. So he was living with his grandparents. He incredible musician, and musicians are a dime a dozen over there. Literally, if you meet someone who doesn't play an instrument or sing, probably better than about most of the people that you know. it's unusual. And so there's all this talent there, and so, you know, he was no different, incredible musician. But as we knew him over the years, like, he dropped out of school, and it was just kind of a point in his life where it looked like there was no hope. As a young teenager, no hope. And another thing about that culture that happens a lot is young people, people get married at a very young age, typically. Most of the time, it's not a proper wedding. It's like, hey, let's go get married kind of thing, and, you know, all of a sudden, they're married. So that happens a lot of time, even as teenagers. And so what we see happening all the time is you have these young people, and, you know, a couple years and a couple kids later, they decide they don't like each other anymore, and they split up, and then the kids are left in a situation like I described a little bit ago. And so, you know, we see this as a cycle because we hear their stories, like C. Moy's story, this is what had happened to him. And, you know, the point he got to, it was kind of like, you know, what other future does he have besides that? We met Aldrin. My clicker is not working here. There we go. Aldrin, another typical example of a young person with incredible talent. He's good at so many things, good musician, just good at a lot of different things. And you know, as we saw him over the years, we noticed he was kind of starting to hang with the wrong crowd, started getting into drinking a little bit. We met this girl's name is Selena. She was someone who was kind of regarded, when we first got to know her, someone with loose character. Again, kind of a prime candidate for the scenario I was talking about just a little bit ago. And so these are the situations we ran into time after time. And this mindset of just, you know, I go to church, I put in my time at church, Sunday morning, Sunday night. They actually go to church a lot. I mean, they have church service Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, Saturday night. The youth service is Friday night, women's service is Tuesday night, and on. They're in church all the time, but the mindset is you go to church, and then, you know, you kind of live your life as you want besides that. And then combine that with the whole culture of corruption, which starts from the government and filters down into the local people. And I could tell you story after story. Just on a government level, for example, we had about a year ago, we bought a vehicle over there. We had to go for registration. And so I sent one of our staff in to do the registration and gave him some money to take along. And our staff know they have to bring back, you know, the change and the receipts. And so when he came back, first thing he said, look, I'm sorry, the receipts are not going to line up with what I spent. And he started telling me how the process works. And this is for something as simple as vehicle registration. He said, you go in there, they will write out the paperwork, write out the receipt, which is a specified amount. As they are handing you the receipt, they will tell you that your bill is something completely different than what's on the receipt, and, you know, a couple hundred rupees more. And if you don't pay them that, your paperwork stops right there, like it never moves. And there's like two or three people in this process till you finally get your registration. And if you don't pay all of them their little bit of extra tip money, you'll never get your registration. And so that's what, you know, the mindset of even at a government level, even, you know, something as simple as vehicle registration. And then that filters down into the, you know, the people, that's kind of their mindset of operating. I've had my staff tell me that when they go out and buy something for the cafe, that they have had, because people know they work for a ministry run by foreigners, so, you know, it's like, hey, this is our chance to make a little extra. So they'll go and buy their thing from a certain shop, and the shopkeeper will ask them, say, okay, your bill is so much, how much do you want me to make the receipt out for? Because they know they're going to be coming back and submitting receipts, most likely to me. And, you know, they're trying to help them cheat their way into a little bit of extra money. And so you have that whole mindset of corruption combined with a little bit of a skewed understanding of what it means to be a follower of Christ, combined with, you know, extreme poverty. And it just kind of creates a situation where people are it just creates this whole culture of corruption, culture of lack of understanding. And so we saw this so clearly in the young people that we started working with. And as we started talking about how can we reach them effectively, you know, we had our ideas, but the idea of, you know, we thought, well, we go in and do this youth rally kind of thing, you know, and invite young people. And what we found out very quickly was two things, and that is, for one, they're in church all the time, like I said, and so they don't really see the need for another church program. And number two, if you start presenting the gospel to them, they'll say, oh, great, I am a Christian. You know, and so you have almost that resistance to the gospel message. And so we saw pretty quickly we have to find creative ways to reach out to young people if we want to reach them effectively. And some of you know this. I hope I'm not repeating too much. Some of you know our ministry quite well, and some of you may not be familiar with it. But I'll kind of go through these. So in our town, one of the first things that we did is we started a cafe, a coffee shop. And this is just some clips of what it looks like in our cafe. And some of you may remember the pictures I showed last time of the town. So this is a remote town. Not a lot happens there. It's a town of about 200,000 people, so fairly large town, but very remote. And right in the middle of town, we've got this modern cafe. And we started out by saying, you know, music is something they love. How can we attract them with music? And so we do live music every Thursday night. And I think I've told this story here before, but the first time we did it, literally no one showed up. We hired an artist. He sat in the corner for 3 hours and sang for our staff. No one came, absolutely no one. And so we kind of were like, well, maybe this isn't going to work after all. But we kept on doing it, and now, you know, 2.5 years in, Thursday nights are packed. On Thursday nights, you almost can't find a seat. And it's created an opportunity for us to develop relationships with local young people. Another interesting side note on the cafe, we just earlier this year bought an espresso machine for the first time. It's a professional, nice professional espresso machine, and it is the only one in our town. I'm not kidding. So you're from Lancaster County, right? That's hard to imagine. We're in a town of 200,000 people, which is a population bigger than Lancaster City, and we have the only espresso machine in town. Not only that, in our entire state, including the capital, there are only two or three others that we know of, and the rest of them are in the capital, which is an hour and a half from us and is a city of over a million people. So there are, I think we found three there so far. So it's kind of a big deal. So these are some ways, you know, creative ways that we reach to the into the local community. And something fascinating happened out of that. We started that cafe as a way to establish connections with local young people, give them a place to hang out, give them a place where they can come and have a good time without getting into drugs and alcohol and all of that stuff. And we did that, but what happened was we found that the most effective ministry and where we saw the most life change was with our staff. And that was something that we hadn't really thought about when we first started it, but we have devotions with them every morning. We've built an incredibly strong relationship with our staff. There's around 12 of them right now. And we can, you know, we met a need that they had, which was they needed a job, right? So we provided a very physical need that they had, gave them a job, gave them a way to earn some money. And through that, we're able to establish relationships that now, you know, 2 years later, we can have very honest conversations with them about what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And we've seen tremendous life change in some of our staff. We have those kind of stories. It's not as great of a story as someone who stands up and says, "Hey, we did a crusade last night and 1,000 young people came to Christ." You know, I love those kind of stories, but that's not what works for us, and that's not, we believe a few years in now that is not what God has called us to do, because it's not effective in the place where God has called us to work. We're also working on a youth center. Again, some of you know about this. We bought about 9 acres of land a couple years ago. It looks like that. By the way, Northeast India is a beautiful area. A few of you have been there. Hi, Ashley and Anastasia. It's a gorgeous area, especially in the summertime. Right now, rainy season, everything is green. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. And so we bought 9 acres of land kind of on the outskirts of town. We hired a group to come in. It's actually a ministry from Colorado Springs that does engineering for big organizations or for Christian organizations. So they came in, helped us put together a design for the facility. And our goal, that's the plot plan of the land. Our goal is to build an athletic facility. So we had identified kind of two key areas that we can use to reach young people. One was music. That's what the cafe is geared toward, and one was sports. Again, a lot of very talented athletes in that area, with just not a lot of outlet for that creativity or that gift that they have. And I know I've been to soccer is a big thing over there, and I've gone to watch soccer tournaments, and especially in the summer when it's rainy season, the fields just turn into like mud. You know, they pass the ball and it like lands and sticks, like it's right there, you know. And I've actually watched games where by the end of the game they were wearing uniforms, but some of the players you couldn't tell which side they were on because they're literally just covered in mud from head to toe. And so we thought, you know, if we can give these young people a facility that they can use, a good facility, something that the community can be proud of, this can be a tool for establishing more relationships, and again, it will create more jobs, which gives us more opportunity to establish relationships with people. So this is the layout that we're looking at. That's the gym. So it'll be a soccer field, a gym. On the other side of the campus, there will be a ministry facility with classrooms, some dormitories, where we can bring in young people for short-term trainings. We're looking at doing maybe a program similar to YWAM, where they come in for training for a few months and then go on outreach for a few months. training for worship leading, missions, leadership, that kind of thing. So that's our goal for that. We were able to start the ground, the grading, the phase one grading in January, this past January, and we graded the entire soccer field. So here's something for you construction guys. We graded the entire soccer field, which it's a pretty good slope, so there was a lot of grading, with two backhoes and three dump trucks. There are no earth movers available there, so we did it, they did it all with backhoes and dump trucks. And when your dump trucks look like that, you can imagine they don't work all the time. And so, you know, between all the breakdowns, the backhoes were actually pretty nice, but between all the breakdowns and stuff, it took us about 2 months to get that done. But we did get that done. And so now the next phase is to finish up that. We have to put in a big retaining wall that we, which there has to be built out of brick because we don't have, you know, the nice techo block kind of stuff. And we estimated that it's going to take about 40,000 bricks, I believe it was. So that's kind of our next big thing on the horizon. But we have launched or are officially launching in 2018 a 5-year campaign, which is, you know, astronomical for us. This is about $1.5 million project, which is just huge for an organization our size, but we're hoping to finish it in 5 years. That's our goal. We have publicly said that now, so we've got some people holding us to that. So that's the youth center. And you know, the thing is, the whole mindset behind this, you know, some people look at this and say, you know, music, sports, you know, what are you guys really trying to do? The bottom line is we are trying to be a part of doing what we can to be a part of raising up a generation who is gonna, you know, come against that corruption that is, you know, in the government, it's in the society, it's even in the church. I could tell you stories about that. But that whole culture, that whole mindset of corruption, and we're like, if we can get a hold of these young people, the old people are not going to change. And you guys, you know, here involved in this ministry, you know that as well as anyone. You know, that's why we focus on children, right? The old people, the older generations, the mindset, you're probably not going to be that effective in changing. But if we can get a hold of some of these young people and instill in them a passion to follow God and show them what it means to follow Jesus Christ on a daily basis, what that should look like, I believe that we can be a part of changing this community and by attracting them on a very physical level, let's say. So children's retreats, this is a thing you guys have heard about before. This is the one out of a few direct ministry projects that we do, where every year we go into, this coming January will be our fifth year in Chorachanpur, which is the town where I live in. This past year we had over 3,000 kids that showed up, which was about 1,000 too many, but you know, that's another story. It got a little crazy. We also did it for the first time in a second town, which was a completely new area for us. And this coming January, we'll be doing it in a third town. So we've got three coming up in January. It's going to be a pretty crazy, hectic month, but we're really excited about it. And basically, we go into these programs and we teach them foundational truths about God's Word. You, to be honest with you, a lot of the ideas for this comes from LBS, so you guys know all about it, right? It's very much the same kind of program, the same kind of setup. The exciting thing is on the other towns that we are doing. So Chorachanpur is our town where pretty much everyone is Christians, or so they say. The other towns we're getting into are not like that. And so that's really exciting for us. When we went to the one town last year, I'm going to guess it was probably about 25% Hindu. And the new town that we're going into this coming January is probably even more than that. And here's the cool thing is we get in there as foreigners. And so just backing up a little bit, even in our town of 200,000 people, my sister Rosie, myself, we have one other guy there. And then there's a British guy who lives in town, is married to a local lady, and they run a drug rehab center. We're the only four foreigners in the entire town. And so when foreigners show up, it's a pretty big deal, right? I've been there for 3 years, and the kids still point and stare, and I just kind of figured out that's probably never going to change. But when we go into these even more remote towns, it's an even bigger deal. And so these Hindu parents, they don't care what you're teaching them. It's like, you have a chance to go to a program run by foreigners, go. Like, you know, so they're happy that their children get to be a part of that. They don't really care about what's being taught. So that's a big advantage that we have as foreigners going into some of these towns. So January is coming up. And by the way, if anyone is, what did I just do? Still working? I think it's still on. If any of you are interested in that trip, and I know someone talked to me before the program, we do need people for January. So if anyone is interested in that, definitely talk to me afterward. We have a few people here who can probably tell you stories, good and bad, of what it's like. But it is a great experience to be a part of doing that type of ministry to literally thousands of children. We're estimating that, you know, between Chorchanpur and the two other ones, it could be 4,000 to 5,000 children total in January that we'll have the opportunity to minister to. Earlier this summer, we started talking about, you know, we do our children's retreats every January, but then the rest of the year, we don't have that much connection with the children. And so what could we do to kind of keep that connection going? And so my sister Rosie, who most of you know, kind of headed up this project, and we're doing a new program. We're calling it Kingdom Kids, where we go into villages on the outskirts of our town within 30 minutes to an hour drive. We do it every Saturday. And so right now we're doing 4 different villages. So we do 2 on one Saturday, then 2 the next Saturday, and we alternate like that. So every village gets the program twice a month. We have about 10 or so volunteers, and this is how we get around. Now, if you look at that picture, that's our vehicle, which part of it is blocked, the back part of it is blocked, but it's kind of like a little pickup truck, you know, like a 4-door pickup truck. And all of those people and all of our equipment, that's how we get around. So the people are not all on the truck in that picture, but they were just before that. So that's how we drive around on some very muddy, bumpy roads. The one Saturday, actually a couple Saturdays now, we went out, it was raining. It is rainy season. And so like the, you know, 6 or 8 people on the back of the truck with all of our sound equipment and all of our snacks and stuff are back there like holding tarps, you know, to try to keep themselves dry, or more than themselves, try to keep the equipment dry. So that's how we get around, and we go into these villages set up in the community hall, which is kind of like the public gathering place, and do this program for children. So it's very similar to our children's retreats. We do singing, games, dramas, Bible stories. We do crafts, which is one thing that we can't do when we have, you know, thousands of children, but works better with hundreds of children. And so this has been a really cool thing to kind of stay connected with the local children. And I know on the first time that we came into the one village for the second time, that didn't make too much sense even to me. But we went to the village one Saturday, and 2 weeks later showed up in the village again. There were literally hundreds of children waiting along the street watching for our vehicle. And as soon as they saw our vehicle coming, like, they all ran toward the building where we were going to have the program. They didn't care that it was going to take us another 45 minutes to set up. You know, they were there. And a lot of the parents show up, just sit there through the whole thing. Some of them, I think, are as intrigued by the dramas and stuff as the kids are. But it's kind of funny to watch. But they really enjoy the program. And so that's been something new for us this summer. And, you know, so we've seen it impact the kids, and we've seen it impact the volunteers. And this is another thing, you know, using some of our ministry then to impact the young people that we get to help us as volunteers. So there's about 8 or 10 volunteers, and probably the coolest thing that came out of that, as most of you know, my sister Rosie lives with there's 4 girls living with her. And they came out of a really rough situation where through a children's home that we used to work with, and I won't get into that whole story. But they've been living with her, and they've been a part of our ministry for quite a number of years. They came to the very first children's retreat as younger kids. They're all teenagers now, in 11th and 12th grade, high school kids, and So, you know, as younger kids, they were there at our children's retreat. They were living at a children's home that we were working with. When they came to live with us, you know, we've been paying for all their schooling. Rosie's been very involved in their lives, and we've been providing for them. And so they were on the receiving end of our ministry for a long time. And I knew that three of them had were going to be volunteers for this new program. But when we got there the first Saturday and I saw them sitting there with the kids, you know, it just hit me. I was like, this is what it's all about. So here, that's Mary and El Bethel are the two girls in the picture there. They are kids that we've been working with for a long time, have been through ups and downs, you know, through hell and back with them, just through some of the incredible difficulties that they faced in the last couple years. And now, kind of on the other side of that, they are starting to impact kids, and they're so good at it, you know? They have a touch with those children. This is the other one. This is Rebecca. They have a connection with those children that I will never have, that Rosie will never have, that a lot of our volunteers will never have. And just to see that, you know, impact goes beyond kind of that first level, so to say. When you impact someone, when you're willing to invest in someone, oftentimes that continues to beyond just that first level. So that's been a really neat experience. And kind of continuing on with that theme of young people that we've seen impacted, I told you about C. Moy at the beginning. A couple years ago, we were able to hire him at the cafe. He's now kind of our maintenance man, handyman around there. Again, young guy. He was about 15, I think, when we hired him. He did get married, okay? So this is probably not something that we would have said, you know, yeah, great idea, go for it. I think he was 17 and his wife was 15 when they got married, and which is very common in the culture again. And it's not, you know, like I just said, it's not something that we would have said, yeah, great, go for it, great idea. But and not only that, they have had a child now just earlier this year. They asked me to name the baby, which is it's happened about, you know, five or six times now. They actually, that's very common in their culture. They ask someone who they look up to and respect to name the baby. But anyway, having said that, they are now surrounded by a group of people who will help them walk through this journey. They've got the other cafe staff who are like family. It's kind of interesting. Our cafe staff, when they leave work in the evening and go hang out, they go hang out with each other. I'm like, don't you guys have any other friends? You know, but that's the connection that our cafe staff have. Often they're over at Rosie's house hanging out. So that's kind of the family. And they're now surrounded by this group of people who can help them walk through this journey. And I honestly believe that they have a way better chance at being successful at this than probably most of their peers do, just because they've got that in their lives. Aldrin, which is the other one I was telling you about, is now a very key volunteer in our Kingdom Kids program. He's one of the musicians. He's often one of the lead actors in the drama. He leads the games. And so we've seen something come out of him that we never knew was there, honestly, just by giving him a chance and surrounding him by people who care, people who can, you know, show him what it looks like to live out this thing we call Christianity. And he's done a tremendous job at it. In fact, he had a part-time job on Saturdays that he actually quit because he wanted to be a part of this, and he doesn't get paid for this. So I almost felt bad when I heard that, but it's like, hey, if he wants to do that, that's up to him. Selena, the other girl I talked about at the beginning, and I think I might have told you her story the last time, she's now one of our managers at the cafe, and she has said, working at Life Cafe has changed my life. And she'll talk about the, you know, the impact that it's had on her. C. Moy said in front of all of us one day, he said, if it wouldn't be for Life Cafe, if I wouldn't have this job and these people around me, I would be a drunkard just like my father. That's what he said. And so we're starting to see, you know, one at a time. We don't have stories of thousands, but we do have stories of a few here and there that we see tremendous life change in. And, you know, all of us have an opportunity to make an impact where we're at. You know, the fact of the matter is we're incredibly blessed. And all of you sitting here, I know, have your issues, you have your struggles, you might struggle to pay bills from time to time, but I guarantee you, almost without a doubt, that basically none of you know what it's like to struggle on the level that a lot of these people do. And those of you who have visited other countries, you've seen this firsthand. If you've never been to another country, I would encourage you to do it. Just go for a couple weeks and just see it. It will change your life. But, you know, we're talking about a community of people here who the average person makes, average laborer makes about, let's just say, less than $5 a day, all right? Cost of living, yeah, it's a little lower than here, but not to that extreme, all right? I could tell you story after story, but, you know, I had kids a year ago or so, teenagers, knocked on my door at 6 o'clock in the morning saying, can we borrow some? I didn't know them at all. They said, can we borrow some money from you? I think they wanted 1,500 rupees, which is like $25. They said, we need to buy some rice. Our parents are, they were in town, living in town for school, and their parents lived in a village a few days' drive away. They said, our parents are coming next week. We can get some money from them. We'll pay you back, but we don't have any rice left, and we need some money to buy a bag of rice. And so I gave them the money, and a couple weeks later, they paid me back. But I don't think probably none of us in this room have faced a situation where we literally don't know how we're going to eat for the next meal unless we can find somebody to loan us a little bit of money to go buy some groceries. That's a foreign concept to probably all of us. I've had, or in that culture, people eat meat only on Sundays, most of them. And the reason it's not a religious thing, it's most of them, they get paid Saturdays, and that's the day when they can afford to buy meat. And again, something that is completely foreign to us. We are incredibly blessed here. We have opportunities that people around the world know nothing of. As I was flying in a month ago or so, flew into Washington, D.C., and, you know, looking out the window of the plane, you know, I see baseball diamonds, I see golf courses, I see swimming pools, I see these big houses, you know, and it just, I think it hits me more every time I come back, the incredible opportunity that we have here. You know, your kids want to get involved in sports? Pick your place. You know, there's a million places you can sign them up to play soccer, play Little League, whatever they want to do. If they enjoy music, same thing. You know, whatever your kids want to get into. And even you guys growing up, you know, you had youth group, all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, those of you who have kids, whatever your kids want to get into, there's, you know, you've got options. You can sign them up for who knows how many different places. Those are opportunities that people in the community that I live in don't have. They simply do not have those opportunities. The potential is there. The talent is there, the opportunities are not. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do is create opportunities for young people. And, you know, sometimes I think we need a little bit of a mindset shift because, you know, we can sit here and we can think, but yeah, I've got my family to take care of. And that's great. I'm not knocking that at all. Family, I believe, should be your number one ministry. But our mindset of what we need and versus people around the world, what they have and what they need, is two different stories. And sometimes I think we don't quite make that connection. You know, when I came home, the first thing I did was was with my family for about a week of family vacation. That's a concept most people in Northeast India and a lot of places around the world have no idea of. Now, if you think of family vacations that you've taken, it's probably been a refreshing time. I know our family, we have a blast on family vacation. I mean, that's kind of our, and I don't get to go on all of them anymore. But that's, you know, we have a great time on our family vacations, and something that I wouldn't want to do without, and, you know, thinking of growing up without, that is kind of like, that'd be kind of sad, right? Their family vacations are not a thing. They don't, for one thing, they couldn't afford it. For another thing, they don't really have places to go, and it's just not a thing. They're, you know, even going out to dinner, you know, most of you, I would guess, within the last month went out to eat at least a few times. Maybe not, but most of you probably did. I know families in our town, families that I know well, who have never, ever in their lives gone out to eat. They don't know what that is. Like, they, you know, there's a few restaurants in our town. We have one of them. but it's just beyond their means. They can't do that. And kind of the thing I think that brought that made this that brought this up in my mind the most, or that I connected with the most, was so we've had some natural disasters here in the United States in the last month. Houston, Florida. They were big, they were devastating, they were, it's a big deal, and I'm not trying to minimize that in any way, because some of us have friends there, some of us know what they went through. Not trying to minimize that in any way, but the fact is, right now, this summer, in India, Bangladesh, and Nepal, they've had flooding like they've never seen before. 1,200 people have died, all right? 1.8 million children, think about this, 1.8 million children cannot go to school right now because approximately 18,000 school buildings are damaged. You've got people whose livelihood depends on, I think there's one picture, it might have already passed, of selling stuff by the side of the road, and they're sitting there in waist-deep water still doing that because if they don't, they won't have any money to use. And we haven't heard about it. Most of you probably haven't even heard about this. They don't have FEMA. They don't have insurance, okay? So a lot of these people, this will devastate them for the rest of their lives. In fact, children, there's organizations that work with children, and they say that there's a very good chance that most of the children, or a good percentage of the children who are out of school right now, will never go back to school in their lives, because education is the last thing that gets taken care of when rebuilding process starts. And so they're saying literally hundreds of thousands of children who are affected by this may never go back to school ever in their lives. This is something we don't know anything about. Houston was a big deal. Florida was a big deal. I get it. Puerto Rico is in crazy, devastation right now. The fact is, I don't think there's anyone around here who says, oh, they don't have a chance of rebuilding. They will rebuild. That's what Americans do, right? It might take some years to get back to where they were, but the future is still there for them. For these people in Southeast Asia right now, a lot of them, their hope of a future, or at least anything, the rest of their life will just kind of be survival, getting through what they can. All right, I'm going to wrap this up. The thing is, we have the ability to do something. Almost all of us as North American Christians have the ability to do something if we want. I'm not going to give you a big sales pitch this morning, but I do want to encourage you, do something, all right? Don't just sit around and say, the needs of the world are too big for me to do anything. I can't take care of 1.8 million children. Of course you can't. Nobody can take care and fix that problem. And so many of us, we use that as an excuse to say, all right, well then, I'm not going to do anything. Because I can't fix the problem, it's not worth getting involved. And I just want to kind of speak against that mindset this morning. You can do something. You might be able to affect one life, you might be able to affect 10 lives, you might be able to affect 100 lives, but you have the ability to do something. Just a reminder again about that thing that impact multiplies. We've seen this. Impacted people impact other people. It's an amazing thing to watch. And so just those, the opportunity that you have to do good is probably not going to stop with just one person. It will multiply. From there, it will multiply some more. And so you have the opportunity to actually do something big, even though it may seem like something small. God has called us to be faithful in the small things, to do what we can is a very biblical concept. Do what we can and let God multiply the rest. I am going to list just a couple needs that we have real quick, just in case anyone is interested. If you go back to our table afterward, these brochures are back there. This shows all of the projects that we have right now. I'm going to highlight a couple of them. Kingdom Kids is the children's ministry we're doing. We kind of started that on faith. That is one of our projects that doesn't, generate any income, obviously. Like Life Cafe is self-supporting now, which is great, or at least real close to self-supporting. But Kingdom Kids, there's no way to earn income. This is costing us about $1,000 a month in expenses. We are able to reach around 800 kids twice a month. So the, return on investment is pretty good. And so we're looking for people to come alongside us as regular monthly donors to kind of help us sustain that. We went into that not having a clear plan on how we're going to pay for it. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Yeah, we do that too. So, you know, we had enough money to get started, and now we would like to get monthly donors to sustain that. We've got the children's retreats coming up. Like I mentioned, you can be a part of that by going on the trip. If any of you would like to support that financially, that's a huge expense. You know, 5,000-6,000 children is probably going to cost us $50,000 plus, which, again, when you think of it, that's $10 a kid, and that includes the free T-shirt that they get, which is a pretty big deal. So it's you know, when you break it down to per child cost, it's not that much. We have the Youth Center Project and some others. So if any of you are interested in that, please talk to me afterward. I can tell you more about those. Our display table in the back. My mom sells these candles. If you notice the smell when you walked in the door this morning, it's because of those candles that are out there. My mom has been doing this for, I don't know, a year or so now, maybe a little more than that. She sells these candles. All of the profit, she doesn't make a dime off of it. All of the profit goes to our ministry. And so we thought, rather than bringing a bunch of T-shirts and stuff, since we did that last time, we'd let her bring the candles and sell them. The new fall colors are back there, I was told. Yeah, I don't know. They smell great. Like, she sends them over to India. I burn them in my house there. I'm probably still burning Christmas candles, so I don't really get. But anyway, so she has those in the back. There are, let's see, what else is back there? There's some brochures back there. There's some Indian items back there that were given to us by a children's home we work with, and they said, go ahead and do whatever you want with them. So those items are on a donation basis, the Indian items, so there's a table with those back there. And then one more thing I just want to highlight. One of the other girls that lives with Rosie does these canvases. She hand paints them. She's really, really good at it. And there are three of them back there, all right? That's all I had left. There are three of them back there. They're $8 a piece. So if any of you want those, she would be more than happy if you buy. I have to put a price on those because the money actually goes to her. So the way she earns a little bit of income on this, a little bit of spending money. So if you want those, there's three of those back there. If you're not on our email list, be sure to sign up. And one last thing, I promise I'm almost done, Dill. I think I went over time. I forgot to look what time it was when I started. If any of you are interested in a little bit more of a long-term partnership, you know, business people, something like that, we recently put together this brochure about our about the Youth Center Project. Talks all about that, kind of our vision behind it, you know, a little bit of the story behind it, the impact that we're hoping it has. And I don't have these out on the table, but I would be more than happy to give them to you if that's something you're interested in. So I'll be in the back afterward, and you can come and talk to me about that. God bless you. Thank you so much for letting me come here, Dill. Thank you so much. I always enjoy coming here. This is kind of like the home crowd, let's say. Most of the people here have been so much a part of my story coming up and probably what led me into what I'm doing now. So God bless you.
All right. Thank you, Mike, for that.